Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 84. Dave, the franchise tag day came and went yesterday. Not a lot of surprises, certainly in the Steeler world, as Mike Wallace got hit with the first-round tender. We saw across the league, I think 21 guys in total were tendered, up from 15 last year. Five kickers, as expected, kind of a little bit of a run on teams keeping their kickers. But really nothing too surprising, except Drew Brees getting tagged and being all sorts of upset, as New Orleans has one of the worst weeks in their history, since Katrina.
Yeah, we'll start with Brees. We'll get that knocked out first. And I guess we can get into the Saints here in a little bit as well with the bounty gate. But, yeah, I mean, this guy is the face of the franchise. If they needed anybody to turn to be an ambassador right now, it would be him. And listen, make no mistake, they're going to get a long-term deal worked out with him. But you would think in the state of the state that the Saints franchise is in right now, and I know there's more to it. There's more about, you know, they probably want to get a feel of what's going to happen early on in free agency, who they want to be able to chase and all like that. But, yeah, I mean, you can't blame the guy. The guy's been Mr. New Orleans Saints and really has turned that franchise around in the right direction. So I understand him being upset, but it'll get worked out there. As far as the Mike Wallace thing goes, this was not a surprise by any stretch of the imagination. And Kevin Colbert laid it straight out on Steelers Live at 4 yesterday on Steelers.com. You know, they just didn't have the cap room to accommodate a franchise tag. It's not a smart business decision to make anyway when it comes to that as close to the cap, even if they would have cleared a little bit of extra room for that cap. I mean, for the franchise tag number, because Wallace would have the card. He'd be holding the cards then for them having to get a new deal done then and, you know, puts the stakes more in his favor by doing so. So, listen, you know, and this is one thing I want to kind of reemphasize here. The Steelers still hold the cards when it comes to Mike Wallace, and I think Kevin Colbert's doing a great job posturing that side of things as well, because – you know, look at the teams that are, I mean, there's not going to be too many teams, if any, interested in giving up a first round pick. I think Bob Labriola pointed out again today on Steelers.com that over the last 10 years, a guy with a first round tender on him has never, you know, succumbed to signing an offer sheet and going elsewhere. So not only do they have history on their side, they also hold the final say, as Colbert strongly suggested yesterday, that they're going to have the right, should he indeed not get signed to a long-term deal before free agency starts next week, to match whatever offers out there. And it would take an offer that would be out of the ballpark. It would have to include a roster bonus in the first year that would make the cap hit just totally impossible, as I like to say, for the Steelers to match. And look at it this way, and I think I brought this up before too, David, is you know, they're holding the cards here, and I firmly believe that, not only in the right to be able to match whatever he should get out on in free agency, but, you know, they're holding the bargaining chip that says, hey, look, you know, if you hit free agency, and Lord knows we don't know what the offer is out on the table to him right now, if you don't sign a new term deal, a new deal by the time free agency starts, and you damn sure better hope that you get an offer in restricted free agency, or else, you know, we're gonna hold you to this 1 year tender of 2.7 something million, and we're not gonna be in a hurry to get this new deal done with you anytime soon, and if need be, we'll make you play under this 1 year tender, and you'll still have to put off getting your big payday in the meantime, and a lot of things can happen over a course of a season. So, you know, that's where we stand right there. I still am in firm belief that there's a good possibility they could get a deal done before free agency starts, but in the end, I'm still not afraid of losing Mike Wallace to another team.
I've said it all along. You'll remember at the very beginning when you were at 50% that he would get an offer sheet. I was under 10 that we lose
no,
him.
No, I wasn't at 50%. I was around 20 or 25%.
50%. We'll go play the tape back. I'll find it.
I've got it up on the site. I was 50% on the Hines Ward thing. That's where you might be getting it crossed. But if memory serves me, I'll go find the tape too. I think I was about 20 or 25% on Mike Wallace in the original beginning.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. Kevin Colbert came out yesterday, again, kind of, laid it out for the rest of the NFL, kind of said, you know, do whatever you want, but we're keeping Mike Wallace, and you'll have to blow your cap up to really even get the offer sheet in there that would make sense or even make it difficult for the Steelers. I think he'll be back. I'll continue to say I don't think a deal will get done before free agency, and I'm not sure a deal gets done, period, and I'm not sure the Steelers should feel a sense of urgency to get a deal done. Having Mike Wallace at $2.7 million this year gives them tons of flexibility to maybe improve some other areas of the team this coming season. They get to see another year of Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, and Emmanuel Sanders, maybe develop another receiver. As I've said, I've also been in the camp that they're going to sign Jericho Cotchery, and I imagine if they do, that'll be kind of a 2 to 3 year deal. So it may turn out that they have to go through this process again with Mike Wallace next year, and maybe they have to franchise him for $10 million. These things may happen, but I don't know that I sense the urgency of the Steelers getting it done. Now, having said that, Kevin Colbert has certainly made it sound as if they're looking to get a deal done. So I guess I'm just afraid with the Stevie Johnson deal on the table, in my mind, that has now made the idea of a long-term contract more difficult for the Steelers. The numbers that Stevie Johnson got with an average annual value of about $7.5 million a year, I think 36.5 over 5 years, I think those numbers, that means Mike Wallace is looking at $9, $10, $11 million a year for 4 or 5 years, and I don't know if that's the kind of money that the Steelers want to be paying to a wide receiver. Maybe it is. But that's the kind of contract that I would have liked to seen the Steelers sign Mike Wallace to. And if that's now a starting point in negotiation and it's going to be a couple million dollars a year more, I think that might make things more difficult.
When I posted my latest update on what I thought he would make a couple of weeks back, I compared it to the Ike Taylor contract that he received, which equaled out to exactly 7.25 a year average, and that's exactly what Stevie Johnson got. So now that we know what the floor is, basically, and what Buzz Cook, Mike Wallace's agent, is going to be pointing to. And you're right, and my original speculation way back was maybe around $9 million, about the price of the franchise tag per average per season. Now, look, here's what Omar Khan, what I think Omar Khan and the Steelers are trying to get done with Wallace. And if it ends up being a nine and a quarter a year average, that's fine. But where the big sticking point is going to be is in the guaranteed money up front. What Omar Khan likes to do, and what we saw most recently with the Lamar Woodley and the Lawrence Timmons contracts at the beginning of training camp last year, was they like to, instead of that full guarantee, that full signing bonus up front, they'd like a good, probably about 25%, 40%, right around in that area, to be in the second year as a roster bonus, which is not guaranteed. So, that's the angle that they're shooting for, because not only would it make his 2012 cap hit, a wee bit easier to swallow in the first year, it also gives them the option of an out in the second year because that roster bonus not being guaranteed, and it also gives them the ability to do as they did with Woodley and Timmons this year, of rolling that roster bonus into some of the base salary of 2013 and turning that into a signing bonus again as well, and prorating that out as well should they need cap room in 2013. So I think I'm willing to bet that the both sides are kind of close in this thing. I think the sticking point is the guaranteed money, and if and when this deal gets done prior to the start of free agency, I now expect it that, and using a per year average is always dangerous to do. You always have to look at the guaranteed money, not the total amount of the contract, but I could see it coming in around $9 million to $9.25 million, $9.5 million per average, if you were to break it down that way.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Obviously, we'll keep things updated. Interesting to hear Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin share some of their thoughts for the first time in a while.
Let me interrupt you, David. Put yourself in the situation of Mike Wallace and Buzz Cook here, okay? Yeah. What if, and I want to throw that scenario back at you that he better be damn good, sure and well, that he's willing to play for $2.74 million tender tag on him this year. That's a hell of a damn risk. If you're Buzz Cook and you're Mike Wallace, that's the worst case scenario for him. It's a huge bargaining chip. What would you do?
Let's remember that $2.7 million is a big chunk of change. So it's Wes Welker's going out there. He played this year for $2.5 million. I mean, guys do this all the time. Wes Welker's tremendously underpaid. He's not getting the long-term payday. He got franchised for $10 million. That's also a big chunk of money, but he's not going to get to, he's 31. He's got a whole different thing looking at him in the sense that he's not, who knows how valuable he's going to be 2 or 3 years down the road. And you assume Mike Wallace will be, continue to have that value because he's 25 or 26, however old he is. So, I don't know. Look, they're playing football. Certainly there's an injury risk. Certainly I would take out some kind of insurance for a catastrophic injury, take the, $500,000 of that $2.7 million and insure myself against a catastrophic injury. So I make sure next year I'm making, $9 million and hopefully have a long-term contract. I don't look at it that way. I don't think you can go about the business of being a football player and have that be the driving force. Now, if the question is, 2.7 this year, and you're haggling over $3 million in terms of a $40 to $43 million contract for 5 years. Yeah, I think that's stupid. I think you go ahead and sign it for $40 million if you can get 25 of that guaranteed up front somehow between roster bonuses and the first year, the second year of the contract. So you're set for life. That makes sense. But no, I don't think playing for $2.7 million should be seen as being a big risk.
Well, I mean, that's what he has facing him. Now, in the flip side, some of the things that's kind of happened in Mike Wallace's favor, albeit kind of small because there's still a first-round tender attached to him, is that we saw guys like, we saw Welker get the tag, as you mentioned. Dwayne Bowe got the franchise tag. Who else am I missing there?
Sean Jackson.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson got the tag, and of course, Stevie Johnson got his new deal. So a lot of those guys who were going to be unrestricted free agent wide receivers, that market has thinned, quite considerably.
But let's say that not one of those was a surprise. Any NFL GM looking out across the landscape and thinking about how that was going to break. Maybe Dwayne Bowe was a small surprise, but Welker wasn't going anywhere. DeSean Jackson wasn't going anywhere. So I don't see this as being something that is different than what we were talking about a week ago.
Yeah, but it is a finality on it, though. Now we know. So,
yep.
That one thing did play in his favor. But let's not forget, there is a limited amount of teams out there, very, very few, that are going to be in this race, in consideration, that would be willing to give up a first round.
Dave, I think we can just on principle, we can rule out any of the top 15 teams. They're not giving up a top 15 pick to pay and sign Mike Wallace when they can draft a guy or whatever. So they're out. So you got the back half of the draft. It's just the same as we've talked about before. Really, the two teams, there are four teams, maybe it makes sense. I don't know that the Patriots will now do it because that's now tying up $20 million in Welker and Wallace. So let's rule the Patriots out now, even though that it would make great sense from a strategic football standpoint. The Ravens have said they're not. Of course, with Torrey Smith, I think it makes less sense for them.
Plus, they had to tag Ray Rice, too.
Right, and they tagged Ray Rice. And we've seen the Bengals. I just don't, again, Mike Wallace makes sense for anybody from a football standpoint. So let's take that out of the equation. You say you got A.J. Green there. The San Francisco 49ers are the one team that I would say, it makes sense in every aspect. They've got the 31st, the 30th pick in the draft, whatever they are. They've got they lack everything at wide receiver. He would be an explosive guy. He got asked about him and spoke positively about them when questioned. So that's really the only team on the horizon that would, even as a Steeler fan, would remotely, that's the only team that I wouldn't be absolutely shocked if they did it.
Yeah, them and the Patriots would be the only two at this portion, and Patriots are really, really sliding down the probability chart because of, even though they could rearrange a few contracts probably and free up the room, it just would not make smart sense, I wouldn't think, to the type of contract that it would need to be with the guaranteed money in year one. I just don't think they would be willing to do that. So, yeah, I mean, I think we are realistically down to the 49ers. God knows what the Bengals would do, but it's not Mike Brown's MO to do this, you know.
And they've got a ton of their own free agents. They've got issues to face. So, you know, we've got till April 20th. We'll be banging this topic around for, you know, I guess it's 40 more days to see.
Well, we'll know early on in free agency. Teams aren't going to wait around.
No, exactly. That's what I said. I think we'll know in the next 10 days. If nobody's done it, it's not going to happen.
Exactly, exactly. And then it gets to the point, does Mike Wallace sign that tender or does he hold out? We'll get it. I mean, there's a whole list of things that could happen after the fact, but that's where we stand as far. I mean, we beat that like a drum, and I just want to clear up the last little bit as we could on that before we get it.
I'm going to continue to strut my peacock feathers as this process goes on if Wallace doesn't get signed, and I'm just going to I'm going to laugh at the national media. I think the local guys weren't on this either. I think Mark Cabali was on it, probably ahead of anybody else. But the local guys didn't have this right either, this whole salary cap stuff. So if you're listening to this show, make sure you tell your friends that Dave Bryan of Steelers Depot and David Todd had this way, way ahead of everybody else. And I thought this has played out just like we told you it would 6 weeks ago.
Absolutely. And talking about wide receivers, David, segueing in, Plaxico Burress was on Sirius XM satellite radio today with Adam Shiner, Rich Gannon, and pretty good long interview they had with him. And of course, all the names came up of the teams that he might be interested in playing for, and they finally got to the Steelers, and Plaxico basically, he was asked straight up, if he would want to return to the Steelers, and he said definitely. He says he still talks to Ben every now and again, and maybe once a month or so, and he called Ben Roethlisberger his favorite quarterback, and he also compared him to John Elway. Said that's as close to John Elway as anybody's going to get. Went on with the praise, and then Shine, and I'm not a big fan of that Adam Shine, but he had a great angle there where he asked Burress why Ben Roethlisberger was his favorite quarterback as opposed to Eli Manning, the Giants quarterback, and he kind of played that off, but also said that knowing what Ben's been through and how supportive he has been, they've been of each other through the trials and tribulations that they've been through and all like that. So even though he listed the Giants as a possibility and not ruling them out of the question to return to them, he definitely sounds interested, and why wouldn't he to return into the Steelers? Now the question becomes, there's only a few ways that Plaxico comes back to Pittsburgh, and one of them, in my opinion, would include them losing Mike Wallace in free agency, and even then, I think the chances are remote. So your thoughts?
You hear that siren in the back. They're not coming for me.
And you're in New York City, too.
I am in New York City, but they're not coming for me. I think that's the siren taking St. John's off the court as the Panthers look like they're going to wipe the floor with them here as they finish the first round of the Big East and at least have their season extended another game. But on those thoughts, listen, I said there was no chance the Steelers were going to sign Plex last year, and I almost looked like an idiot because they had him in camp. I had a very strong view, and I was wrong. I didn't think they'd even entertain it. They did. So I'm not going to be so strongly against it this year. I'm not surprised Plex is talking about it. He's trying to get a job. So, I'm sure he would say that about virtually any team, but he has connections to Pittsburgh. So be it. But again, I think you're right. I think Cotri is a much higher priority than Plex. He would be the guy. Plex would have to come and play for $1.5 million. But you know what? Yeah, stranger things have happened. I don't, because of the fact that they had him into camp last year, I won't rule it out. But as you said, I think it's unlikely, and I think they'll target Cotri ahead of anybody else.
I think, too, Kotre, what Kotre brings, and we've covered this, is what he brings to the locker room, the leadership that needs to be, you know, a veteran guy that kind of can take on, carry the Hines Ward torch a few more years going forward with these young receivers that hopefully will include Mike Wallace moving forward. Kotre just makes so much sense moving forward in this thing. Now, of course, if they lose Wallace and you get Kotre back anyway, it all depends on the contract Plaxico would want. But even then, I find it a very, very slim remote possibility. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but you know, the chances of it happening are very, very slim, and none already left town. So that's where I think that the Steelers stand on that situation right now with him. So
and I'll just point out, Dave, just for our listeners who are in front of a computer, Brian Billick just put up an article on FoxSports.com talking about the 49ers and their need for a number one receiver. And now that the list of receivers is out there, you know, teams can talk about connecting guys with teams. And Vincent Jackson going to Chicago is big talk of what's out there. But there's another piece that's out there where this guy names the top receivers on the market. And moving away from Mike Wallace, I want to talk about Hines Ward a little bit. And I've said, I had this conversation last night with somebody. I'm of the mind that Hines Ward is not going to get a contract offer from anybody. And I just want to just run through some names. The top receivers we know who are out there: Vincent Jackson, Marcus Colston, you know, Pierre Garçon, Robert Meacham. A guy who I think will fly under the radar, who I think would be a very good pickup for somebody, is Laurent Robinson of Dallas. He's 26. He's fast. He led the Cowboys with 11 TDs last year. You've got Mario Manningham, who's only 25. And then kind of the next tier, you got Josh Morgan, you have Plex, you have Brandon Lloyd, Ted Ginn, Eddie Royal, Donnie Avery, Early Doucette. And then there are guys who, you know, we don't really think about, but you guys got like Harry Douglas, Roscoe Parrish, Roy Williams from Chicago, Jerome Simpson, Andre Caldwell, both of Cincinnati, Reggie Wayne. You got a lot of guys out there that are going to be guys looking to be third, Steve Smith, looking to be third and fourth wide receivers. I just can't see, if you think there are 25 guys in the free agent market who are better than Hines Ward, there are 25 guys who are going to be drafted by teams at least. And then there are going to be some, you know, street free agents. We'll say there are 10 more of those. That's 60 guys who may have a better shot of getting a job than Hines Ward. That's, you know, to a team right there. I just find it really unlikely that the team's going to see value in signing Hines Ward, and will he sign a contract for $1 million to be somebody's third or fourth wide receiver?
And plus, yeah, but Hines is only going to give you probably 20 snaps a game.
Yeah.
You know, if that, you know. And you would be fearful if your number two went down and Hines had to be your number two wide receiver. You know, I think, and throwing 49ers back in this, I think the only team that would be a possible landing spot for him would be the 49ers as a third or fourth wide receiver guy, just for mere, you know, you're not going to bring a guy in just to be a mentor. You're not going to pay him to be on a 53-man roster and take a roster spot just to be a mentor. But, you know, of what he can offer on the field in third down situations possibly and all like that, that would be the only team that I could really connect a dot to that would be a destination for him.
Well, let me get to a little more Hines Ward stuff here. First of all, I want to thank, you know, a lot of you wrote in talking about Hines Ward's Hall of Fame candidacy. Robert Kahneman, a guy who I went to school with, Andrew Weatherstone, Carmen, Ken Blount, Blue Jay Ways, Kyle's been writing in a bunch of times. So appreciate all the thoughts on Hines Ward's candidacy. And Dave, I thought it was interesting, even though, you know, we have a crowd that you would think would be leaning toward Hines as a positive candidate, it was still relatively split in terms of what people thought. And as we discussed this a lot, and I don't think we need to get into it a lot today, the media and the people I see talking about it generally are split on this, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I want to ask you, I didn't see the tweet that supposedly was from Hines Ward account first thing yesterday morning, and then within an hour or so it was deleted. And it was talking about a petition if you wanted him back on the team. Do we know if this came from his account? Has he commented on this at all?
You know what? I never followed up on it, but I made a comment on Twitter right after it came out because the person in that tweeted and actually had the Facebook post said this is not something basically the person was saying that he was going outside the realm and didn't have approval really from Hines to post that. So it was very uncharacteristic. And as you said, I guess it has been removed. I did not follow up on that. That nothing that you're going to do or say right now, as far as a petition or something like that, I know good and well Hines did not approve that message. I would not be surprised if that person no longer is helping out Hines Ward on his Facebook page or social media stuff as well.
So there are people who do have access to his account.
I am sure. Just like there are people that have access to Troy Polamalu's stuff, which I know for a fact that happens as well too. These people have assistants and all like that that run their social media and all like that as well too. So I see that as a person that posted that probably shouldn't have. That got too emotionally wound up in this thing. And if indeed, I'll have to double check see if it was deleted or whatnot. But we see the backlash from that. Along those same lines, though, did you see Lynn Swann, who's now on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, did you see his video statement in regards to the release of Hines Ward and the Steelers organization?
I did not see it.
I like what he had to say, really. I mean, it was all pro Steelers that, look, Hines Ward is this great wide receiver, future Hall of Famer. Appreciate him as a player, but he defended the Steelers organization, that they're as successful as an organization as you'll find. That you can't argue with the success that the Rooneys and their coaches have had since the 1970s, and kind of attacking that from that angle and basically want to say that emotionally it can't be replaced and that it always hurts and you wish it could always be the same. And he got a quick plug in there about the Pittsburgh Power real quick. And he said that Steeler Nation should always stand behind those players that they love and respect and that have been great for this ball club, like Hines Ward, but also stay true and close to the people that are making the hard decisions to make sure that they are competitive down the road. So that's kind of how he ended that video statement on Facebook. So I have no problem with him doing that. I would not be surprised if maybe I have my tinfoil hat on here. Maybe the Rooneys kind of prodded him into making such a remark. But the thing that I found more hilarious, and hopefully you have this pulled up on your computer right now, is he made this video statement in front of this self-portrait behind him that it just kind of shocked me as odd. So do you have that pulled up, and are you looking at the picture of him sitting in front of this portrait?
I'm not. It's a portrait of him?
Yeah, it's a self-portrait of him with a suit and tie on, look like stuff from when he was maybe running for one of these offices, and it's surrounded by some Steeler references as well inside the same portrait. It's sort of a collage, if you will, the self-portrait. I just found that. I don't know why I found that kind of odd, kind of a Kenny Power-esque type moment in my eyes. So I don't know. Maybe I just have the strange sense of humor that I have, but that kind of caught me off guard.
That's entertaining. I hadn't heard the video, and I'll look for it. So Steeler receivers seem to be the topic du jour of the month. The Steeler offense. Nothing else has changed here. We had Kevin Colbert talk about the cap, and you've commented. It looks like they might be around somewhere between 111 and 117 million. We still haven't seen, as far as I know, an official release of what the final cap number is, but Colbert keeps referencing number, I think, or people do, around 120, so maybe a tad lower than we had thought when we discussed 125. But again, I don't know if the league has, you know, told the teams and the number's just not public now. I'm not sure why that's taken so long, but certainly by the start of free agency here in about 10 days or 8 days, whatever it is, we should have that nailed down. Dave, the other big news, and literally, I mean, you know, nobody wants to joke about Katrina, but this is Katrina too down in New Orleans with what's been going down there. You talked about the GM speaking of Breeze and calling him good or very good, not great. You know, you've got your quarterback pissed off. You're going to lose. You're probably going to lose your starting guard and one of your two starting receivers. And now you've got this bounty gate. And there has been there has been so much written about this already. And the fact that the NFL has 50,000 pages of documents and testimony on this means that, you know, they're out to get their man, and they're going to get their man, and Greg Williams is going to be first, and we'll see what happens to Sean Payton. Certainly the franchise is going to get whacked really hard, and we can get into that, but the question I want to start with is, this is a game where your objective is to beat up the other guy and knock him out of the game, and now guys are getting paid to do that. Should we be as morally outraged as it appears that many people are?
I'll put it to you this way. I'm not surprised. And if you don't think this happens in some shape, way, or form in every NFL locker room for the last, 25, heck, probably since the beginning of when this game started being played, this has been going on. It seems like it's come to a head now with the evidence that's out there. But morally outraged, I would say no. Because, I mean, I think this has been going on in some shape or fashion in every NFL locker room. It's just coming to a head now.
Yeah, I'm not willing to say. I've heard some other people say that it happens in every locker room. I think it's different. Well, you know, look, we don't know the answer, but certainly it does happen in different places. We've seen that it's followed Greg Williams around, so he has sanctioned it. I think it's different if guys are putting $50 down or you have an outside guy tied to Reggie Bush who's putting in $10,000 of his own money, which the Deadspin story came out. And if you haven't seen that, look that up. This is a guy who's a convicted felon who might currently still be in jail, actually, who was associated with Reggie Bush and, you know, helped bring USC down in that whole mess. And has been, you know, they got tons of pictures of him on the field celebrating the Super Bowl win. And he's closely tied to Sean Payton and mentioned in Sean Payton's book. So this is where I think you can have some moral outrage. The idea, you know, Brett Favre came out and spoke about it. And, you know, I don't really want to hear Brett Favre say anything, but I think this is something that it's okay for him to comment on. And I respect his opinion. He talked about how some of the guys who he was friends with, he felt like the hits were unusual, not the typical type of NFL hit. He mentioned Darren Sharper by name, a guy that he knew personally and had played with, and said, you know, he felt like maybe they were trying to injure him. So when you hear things like that, it's a little bit scary in the sense of those guys. But having said that, you would think that would be well known around the league, and they've kind of patrolled themselves. And again, in a game where violence is, you know, cheered, appreciated, glorified, I'm not sure that I can work up a lot of moral outrage.
Yeah, me either. Now, one thing, and we kind of talked about this before we started the show today, is Ryan Clark, that he is never at loss for words, nor is James Harrison when it comes to stuff like this. But I don't know if I'm okay or not okay with Clark chiming in as much as he is, because the more that you, because let's face it, Clark was part of the Washington Redskins for those first two seasons that Greg Williams was there too, and that they're going back and looking at the stuff as far as happening with the Redskins. In fact, I think there was a report on a Washington radio station today or yesterday that Joe Gibbs was even part of handing out $100 bills for hits on a quarterback and stuff like that. So, you know, Ryan Clark chiming in, you're bound to open up your mouth. And I respect Ryan Clark for trying to hold up the code. And I wrote about this immediately after this happened, that Ryan Clark knows the first rule of Bounty Club is don't talk about Bounty Club. But, you know, moving forward with that, his appearance on ESPN First Take yesterday is, you know, he's starting to what's also coming out is, yeah, I've been part of pools where we've had money where we've bet on intercept or paid for interceptions and big plays and all like that. You know, this is all going to snowball into one big thing because, hey, you think the IRS is not watching this closely as well, too, to you know they want their share of any extra money that any of these players are getting. There's always the threat of the salary cap circumvention and all that's going to play a big role, I think, in the Saints bounty gate as well, too. You know, throw out a one or two liner out there, perhaps, but you know, basically when it comes to this and until this investigation is complete, I really just wish Ryan Clark would just, hey, the Steelers are not involved. Their dog really is not a big part of this hunt right now. And Lord enough knows that they've been in enough spotlight as it's come to this crap over the years and hits and player safety and all like that. Just keep your mouth quiet when it comes to this.
Yeah, I like the fact that Kevin Colbert, you know, addressed this right away and said, we feel like our house is in order on this topic, and that's good. It was the right thing. Hopefully it is, and they can move forward. Ryan Clark is a guy very much looking for the media and looking for the spotlight. There's no doubt when his career comes to a close that he sees himself moving in that way. We see him on some of the Steelers shows in Pittsburgh, some of the events, half-hour stuff, and anytime he gets a chance to comment on things, he does. You know, I'm sure people go to him now, so I don't really know the circumstances of where he came from on this. But again, you know, calling people snitches and kind of that whole stuff, I just think, you know, why do you want to be out there being a guy publicly in something the league is obviously going to come down very hard on? Why do you want to come out and kind of take the other side and defend, you know, what's going on and say guys are being snitches and that's bad? I'm basically with everything you said.
And you know, Skip Bayless, as much as I'm not a big fan of Bayless, he is good at catching people in their words and all yep. like that. And that's what he does. That's why he does what he does. And he gets paid for it because he's good at that. So I know Ryan Clark likes to constantly try to one-up Skip Bayless, and it has before several times. I'm just not sure that this is an area that you kind of want to be messing with by trying to define the difference between whistleblowing and snitching and all like that. I think it's irrelevant. Let the NFL do their job on this and just kind of lay low on this.
Absolutely. I'm with you. David, in terms of, let me just ask you then, in terms of the picture of, if we're just going to guess here, and hopefully we get this out to people before they do come down with an answer, I'll tell you what I think. I think Greg Williams gets banned from the league for a year. St. Louis fires him. He gets banned for a year. And I think you'll see Sean Payton get a 6-to-8-game suspension. I think the Saints lose. They don't have a first-round pick this year. They lose their second-round pick this year, their first-round pick next year, and they get a $500,000 fine. Who knows if that's even going to be close, but I think that's how hard they're going to come down on them.
Do you think – I can agree with that, David, but do you think any players will get any punishment?
No.
Me either. Me either.
All right, other topics. I don't know what else is, you know, the franchise stuff was the big stuff in the league, and this bounty gate stuff has certainly been topical. Other things, front and center, looks like Peyton Manning will have a decision in the next 24 hours. Supposedly he has, I think somebody surreptitiously videoed some of this because I saw it on ESPN last night. It looked like it was from somebody's iPhone or something, just some scratchy video. But word coming out is that he threw very well. He's, you know, kind of back to full speed. Looks like he'll be, the word I heard is he'll be ready for minicamp, wherever that may be. It's hard to believe that the Colts will do anything other than release him tomorrow and not pay the up to $28 million maybe that they owe him. Any thoughts on that?
I think he's gone as well, too. I don't see how you can pay him that money. And, I mean, we all know what they're going to do in a draft, the direction that the franchise has moved with. I think he's as good as gone, and that decision should be out any time now.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, one other thing. We got a lot of good feedback on Twitter as well too from the last podcast with Cecil Lammy. What a great hard hitting draft talk that is. A day or so ago, I released my mock draft version 2.0. which is up on the site. Got a lot of good feedback on that, both positive and negative. I invite you to go to SteelersDepot.com and have a look at that. I don't want to spoil it to you if you have not seen that as yet either. Of course, the rest of the tenders are forthcoming. I have my date confused on that. The actual deadline of that is by the start of next free agency. There's a lot of talk of maybe guys like Legursky or Foster, if they could possibly get second-round tenders put on them, being as they were undrafted free agents And there would be no compensation involved should they lose them. I'm not convinced that that's going to happen. I still think that you put the original round tender on them, which basically gives it's a game of chicken. I call it chicken tenders because you still have the ability to match that offer. And as cash strapped as they are, I'm not sure if even the kind of the small difference between the two that you still put a second round tender on them in fear of losing them, despite them already letting Chris Kimoato go. So that's something to look for when these tenders come out, is the level of Ligurski and Foster goes. And David, before we get out of here, I mean, I talked about the Lynn Swann picture. I direct message you. You owe the listeners a reaction to looking at that picture. So please click on that link and give me the reaction of that Lynn Swann picture.
I will. And while I'm doing that, I'll tell you that I'm just going to say that I don't think the Steelers have it. I think there's zero risk of them losing these guys. I don't see other teams coming in and making a run at two kind of marginal NFL players. So I'd be surprised if the Steelers did anything other than what you originally said about their original round tender. And, if somebody wants to sign into a contract, I imagine the Steelers will, make a decision that would probably, assuming the contract's not outrageous, they'll match it. But, I've got the video. I pulled the thing up, and unfortunately the video didn't load for me. So I will give that on our next podcast.
Okay, well, good. Because make sure you remind me, because it's just kind of outrageous. And if you're listening to the show, a lot of good feedback we had from the Hines Ward, Aaron Smith, or the Hines Ward Hall of Fame talk that we had a couple of podcasts ago. Great feedback, as I said, from the Cecil Lammy interview that we had in the last podcast. Shoot us our comments about anything that we talked or your comments about anything we talked today. You can do so by emailing the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @SteelersDepot. Follow David on Twitter @HammerSpeaks. Follow the show @TerriblePodcast. As well, too, we invite all interaction from you, anything that we talk about on the show, and we try to get to as many comments and answer as many emails as we can as well, too. So thanks for that.
All right, great stuff, and we'll be back at you on Friday with the latest on Peyton Manning. What day is today? Tuesday. Yeah, we'll be back on Friday, the latest on Peyton Manning, any updates we have on the salary cap. Certainly, if any news on any other Steeler moves, which maybe now we get kind of a one-week lull here in Steeler news before we hit free agency. So thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.